Welcome to the IT Babble podcast, where we talk about educational technology and a whole lot more. You can find our podcast on iTunes, please subscribe, or your very favorite podcasting app. Also, you can find our blog at www.itbabble.com. Happy New Year, everybody. It's the IT Babble podcast. I'm Patrick. Had a great break. Tony, how was your break?
Break was good. Went to Hawaii.
Oh.
To a friend's wedding, which if it wasn't for the friend's wedding, I probably wouldn't have gone because it's like, too expensive. But yeah, it was good. We went to the island that has the volcanoes on it. So it was kind of interesting.
Oh, that's pretty cool. And you got to see the lava flowing and stuff. And
yeah, to see the lava flow right now, you've got to do a helicopter. You can't stand and watch it anymore. But apparently 2 years ago, you could actually go up onto some ridges and watch it flow into the ocean.
Oh, that'd be pretty awesome. Yeah. That'd be sweet.
So, yeah, it was good. The island here is pretty cold, so it was good to go somewhere warm.
Yeah, that's true. And Hawaii is very pretty, you know. Of course.
Yeah.
You know, Magnum PI. Yeah, it's good.
Came back to some cold winter and snow. We have a snow day today. No school.
That's unbelievable. I mean, it's an island, and it's a boarding school, so all the students are there, and I imagine a lot of the teachers are there.
But the staff that do everything else do not live on campus, and they live pretty far away. So
I guess that makes sense. You know, in a weird world, you know, but not everybody lives on the campus, so wow, man, yeah. My break was pretty good. We got the whole family was sick, but it's okay. We still had a really good Christmas, and I got to see some family and friends, and we had snow. It was a white Christmas here, and that was, I think, the first white Christmas or it was the first white Christmas that my wife has ever had, because she grew up in the South, and so. So she was very excited about that. She was very excited. It was cool. It was kind of cool. Of course, I had a fever, so I didn't care. I wanted to lay in bed and drink water. All right. Anyway, on today's show, man, we have got a whiz bang show here. I'll talk about my review of Canva, canva.com. And we'll talk about what Canva is and whether you should use it or not. We'll talk about you're angry, Tony, at Gmail and Google Groups, and we're going to talk about why you are so angry. I don't know. I'm looking forward to hearing this. I've not heard this before, so I'm looking forward to it. And I'm going to take on the World Health Organization wants to make gaming disorder, or people who are addicted to video games, they want to make that an actual disorder. And I have some issues with that, and we'll talk about that. But first, we're going to talk about this article on The Verge titled, "It's Not Just Logan Paul, The Moral Compass of Social Media is Broken." And this was written by Catherine Cross. And of course, we got a link to the article itself in the show notes. And so I didn't know who Logan Paul was. I didn't know. But apparently he went to Japan. And in Japan, there is a forest that is famous for suicide.
People going to kill themselves, yeah.
Yeah, and you lived in Japan for a little while.
Yeah, so I lived in Japan. I go to Japan very regularly, but I lived there from 2002 to 2005, pre-Facebook. I mean, Facebook started small in 2004, no YouTube, and it was common then, and even in my area where I lived, people would meet, and they would rent like a van. And they would go into a forest, and they would light like a little charcoal grill in the van, and all just pass out and die.
Wow.
Japan's had one of the number one to number three suicide rate for, I think, like a couple decades. I could check that, but for a very long time. So,
Yeah. That's not a place I would think of with a high suicide rate. I guess there is some cultural significance there that I'm not aware of.
There's just so much social pressure if you're Japanese, and family pressure. It might be getting better now, actually. I'm not sure, but it was one of those weird things that, that you become aware of when you live there. And as you start to learn Japanese and talk to Japanese people, there's this subculture there. So yeah, it's pretty sad.
Wow. Well, Logan Paul is a YouTuber. He's kind of a famous YouTube guy. He's got 10, 12 million subscribers on YouTube, which makes him, you know, maybe top, probably inside the top 20. And he went to this forest and they found a body that hadn't been discovered yet. And they filmed it, and you know, some people laughed at the video. They probably weren't expecting to find. They were hoping to quote find a dead person, but just kind of laugh. Oh, we didn't find a dead person, but then they actually came across the real body, and they didn't know how to handle it, you know, emotionally. But they filmed it, and then they put the film on YouTube. And he got it just exploded here. I don't know if you heard about it in South Korea much.
I think I read about it maybe on Slashdot or something, but I did not hear about it in the news.
Oh gosh, yeah. It was huge here. It was everywhere. And so this guy is taking. He's like, I'm sorry. What I did was, you know, he tried to apologize several times for it. People weren't having it, so he's like, I'm stepping away from YouTube. I don't know what else to do. I'm really sorry about this. I'm making him sound more sympathetic, because a lot of people think that he's a kind of a crass person and that this isn't a real apology or whatever. But Catherine Cross writes about that this is not just Logan Paul, it's not just YouTube, it's just the moral compass of social media is broken. And she kind of goes on that Facebook and YouTube and Twitter and other sites just don't step up and do enough moderation. And they said it is, since the content is on their hosted on their site, they have a moral obligation to go through and find this content and weed it out and get it out of there, so people to protect the other viewers. You know, they feel that these people are louder than other people, and they're abusive, and they attack, and they keep other people's views and opinions down. And it's sure, you know, and it certainly sounds like, you know, that Logan Paul did this, you know, because he knew YouTube wouldn't do anything, wouldn't take the video down, that he could do this, and he could, you know, make money off of this, and he could get famous off of this, and he could, you know, and so what I think this boils down to, and I think a lot of schools are doing this, is they are teaching character and morals inside the school. It's becoming part of their mission, and it's going to be kind of woven into their curriculum about making good decisions and what's right and what's wrong. And that, you know, YouTube should have seen this video and said no. As soon as it was flagged, said no and taken it down and punished Logan Paul right away. But what do you think about this, Tony? What are your thoughts? Well, do you agree, disagree that it is, you know, Google's or YouTube's or Facebook or Twitter, it's their responsibility to keep this type of stuff, whether, you know, I don't think anybody agrees going and filming somebody who committed suicide is a good thing, but what do you think?
I think all these services have limitations, and they are free. We're not paying for them.
Yeah.
If we went back to an AOL model, like, where you subscribe to be part of the AOL and nobody else could go in unless you paid, this stuff is manageable. But as long as services are free, I don't really think it's manageable, because do you know where do they put all of their money? They put all of the money into making sure if you upload a 30-second clip with some music in it that you didn't make, that the clip gets taken down immediately.
Yeah, that's right.
That's what they care about. I can upload a video with Airwolf, like, theme, and if it goes over 21 seconds, my video is taken down immediately. So obviously, if they have people focused on that, they could focus on other things, but they're only focused on what's going to get them sued by people who have money.
Yeah.
And so I, you know, if you're using a free service and you opt into it, and everybody opts into it. So I don't know. I think we're just at a point where maybe people should say, I don't want to be like, I don't want to be in the space. Like, I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know how much value, you know, I look at the kids at school and I don't really know how much value they get out of any of these services unless the content has been curated. Like, if I ask the students that I have here, if I'm like, go to YouTube and find something on the MakerBot, they can't do it. They'll just find advertisements. They can't actually do it.
Yeah.
I can find good lessons on YouTube, and I can put them in Edmodo or in Google Classroom, and it's fine because it's like curated content. But uncurated content, the kids just don't know what to do. Like, they can't do it. So I guess the real question is, you know, should we even, you know, we're not really paying for this stuff. We're only using it because it's free. Maybe that's really the problem.
That they should make it a paid service. So that's interesting. I've never thought of that. I got to chew on that for a little bit.
Like once you pay, like once money starts flowing in from something besides advertisements.
Yeah.
Once real money that can be connected to people goes in, then a service can say, all right, well, people are paying to join. We know who they are. That's number one. So we don't really have to worry about being sued anymore if they upload the Airwolf theme, because they can be sued directly.
Yeah.
So now all of your services that you're providing can shift to making sure that your community is the way that you want it. And if people don't like your community, they can opt out. That's what I'm thinking.
That is, yeah, that's not bad. That's not bad. But you can't, YouTube, you can't make, I don't think it's too big of a ship to make that shift. I think I read somewhere that every minute there's something like 25 to 30 hours of video that gets uploaded. I mean, how can they moderate that amount of?
It's not possible.
It's impossible. It's yeah.
They have to, the service has to basically contract, you know, be tiny, but yeah. Paid.
Or fractured. You know, maybe that's it. Maybe they fracture off like a paid part for.
Like I don't know, I would pay for about a school of 1,000 students, I'd probably pay $2,000 or $3,000 a year for a streaming platform that included, you know, features that we needed. Because streaming is really expensive.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, it's very expensive. I mean, and a lot of people don't understand that when you upload your video to YouTube, let's say you shoot it on your phone, it takes that video and then it converts it into like 7 or 8 other videos. You know, oh, this right. is a 480p, this is a 240p one. Depending on internet speeds, it'll automatically switch to those different video qualities on the fly. And YouTube has gotten much better about this. And a lot of people don't even realize it. They have no idea that when you upload it, that, so you're not just uploading your, you know, 30-second, 240-megabyte file. It then makes multiple different copies of that file and ties them all together and links them all to, it's very complicated. It's certainly not a simple thing where, you know, but I don't know. I mean, if you leave it to the community to moderate, then you'll have people who would just be like, oh, that's hate speech. You know, it may not be hate speech. It may just be a strongly worded opinion, but they'll say, oh, that's hate speech. And they're going to flag it. And that's it. Or they're like, oh, this person said something before that I didn't like, and so I'm just going to flag every video that they come across. And you can't trust people to moderate themselves.
That's true. But I do think with a lot of the social media, it's just showing you what you always look at. Like, it's not saying, hey, Patrick, here's an alternative view. It doesn't do that.
No, it doesn't.
You know, so the more popular stuff you like, the more of that thing it gives you.
Yeah, Facebook wants you to be happy. So they show you things that you agree with.
Right.
And YouTube, too. You know, it looks at the videos. Like, I've been playing Metal Gear Solid, and I've been checking out some Metal Gear Solid videos. So when I go there, the front page is just littered full of Metal Gear Solid 5 videos. You know, which is fine, because that's, you know, that's what I want to look at right now. So I'm okay with it. But, you know, I don't subscribe to Logan Paul. You know, he had 15 million subscribers or something like that. I don't subscribe to him. I don't know anybody who does. I know they're younger kids. But I don't know. I mean, do you put something up that says, hey, you type in you have to have a Google account to view YouTube? And your Google account has to be, you know, you have to put in your birth date and you have to have a real name or I don't know. I don't know what a solution is here. And I don't think having Google and those people holding those people's feet to the fire, I don't think that's the solution.
What's the solution for Hangouts live streaming? Like, you can live stream and it'll just be on YouTube when you're done.
Yeah, and Facebook too. They have a live stream. Twitter does.
So what's the solution to that? That's just cameras going.
Yeah, I mean, there's nobody moderating that. Not in real time.
It's not really possible to moderate. And so I don't know. I think we could be just heading back to that, you know, incredibly siloed model, like that AOL model. And it's funny because everyone really complained about it, but within like AOL. I mean, I remember I was young, but I remember like there were communities within AOL and you joined the community and you had to ask, like, you would join and they'd be like, well, tell us why you want to join. And sometimes they would have like a little survey you had to fill out, like, and it would take days to be approved.
Yeah.
There's a lot of thought that goes into that type of process. And I was watching, I like this show called Halt and Catch Fire that kind of tracks the rise of technology from the 70s into now. And they're at this point in the show where basically one company is making what we have as Google and the other company's building what we have as Yahoo. And Yahoo initially started out as just like a curated service where they had all these people who were just like, there would be a guy just obsessed with like sci-fi movies, and his job was to link and categorize all the sci-fi websites like for the people on YouTube. And then Google came along and was able to do it with an algorithm and eliminated the people. But what I think is funny is that I actually think maybe the curated links are better. Like, I think maybe the content is better because it's exactly what you thought it would be. There's not as much of it, but it's the best of what it's an obsessed human that really loved that thing. They were able to find all like hundreds and hundreds or thousands of these links and put them together and categorize them and rate them by age. Right. And so when you went into it, it was exactly what you were looking for. I mean, you didn't get the whole internet, but you can't read the whole internet.
No, not even come close. I mean, most people just go to the same websites day after day. You know, they rarely go to something new. You know, they probably go to a handful, maybe 20, maybe 50 websites at the most, and then leave it.
Yeah. And, you know, if I have to do some kind of, like, occasionally I'll write some kind of research paper, like once every, like, 3 or 4 years I'll do some actual research. I don't use the internet. I use ProQuest. Or I use JSTOR. I might use the internet to just get some ideas, but I'm always trying to actually find, you know, things that are peer reviewed or articles that have been checked by real people before they were published.
Yeah.
I still do that because most of the stuff I find online is kind of a reference to the source. So I want the source.
I see that all the time. They're like, well, a person said this. Well, who? Or this study, a study out of Columbia, and they don't even name the study. They just say, well, study out of this university. You know?
So, like, it's something that, you know, I always kind of got annoyed because when all these companies were making educational services, I always thought Yahoo was actually in the best position because they had the categories, they had the lists, and they had it so it was simple. Mm-hmm. And I always thought they had the best like model for like a school where you would subscribe and then all the stuff within a given age group and topic would just be there in links. Because I try to work with teachers on a regular basis not to do open internet searching with children. Like, don't just let them go on the internet and search.
Yeah, yeah.
And we've got services that they can use for like kid safe search. I've got a link on the portal and it's like kid safe, like Kiddle, and I've got a picture safe one that's safe for kids.
Yeah.
But so many times they're like, just open Safari and Google it. It's like the top 10 links are ads. Like,
yeah, that whole first page sometimes can just be ads.
Sometimes I literally click on 3 or 4 at the bottom just to jump the first two.
Yeah, yeah. I just came up with a theory. Do you want to hear the theory? You want to hear it?
Do it.
Okay, so net neutrality failed. That failed on purpose. The government wants to regulate.
It wasn't enforceable.
What's that?
That net neutrality bill wasn't enforceable. They had to do something.
Oh, yeah. It was never going to It was never going to be enforced. It was going to get sued no matter what happened. And Tom Wheeler knew that. I think they knew that. Anyway, the government knows this thing can never happen. So if they say, oh, we support it, that's complete. That's all after the fact. I love how Google and Facebook and Netflix were like, oh, we support net neutrality after it got voted down. Like they came out publicly and said, oh, yes, we really support it after it had been voted down. Anyway,
they didn't support it at all.
Here's what I think they want. The government always wants backdoors to the encryption. They are going to pass a law that says we need to regulate the content on the internet, and this includes encrypted content. I think this is what they're doing. They're setting it up for another run, and they're like, and then they're going to be like, you know what? We're also going to regulate prices, and we're going to mandate minimum speeds, and we're going to do this stuff, but we also want this backdoor that we're only use when we need to. But I think that's what they're ramping up for. I think that's what they want. I think that's what they're going to do. I think they've completely abandoned net neutrality even before Obama was out, and that's what I think. That's my theory. That's my theory. We'll see. I'm probably wrong, but
well, no. I mean, they've been gunning for it for a while.
They have been. This could be a good angle for them to come in on. They're like, hey, look, you're gonna have cheaper and better. And more, you're going to have cheaper internet. It's going to be faster. It's going to be more stable. And we're going to help it grow in America. We're going to subsidize it and get it everywhere and faster. But we're going to be reading your emails too. I think that's coming. Or well, maybe not personal emails. Maybe just business emails. Business and education.
And one of the questions you have posted is how should schools address this issue?
Yeah.
I don't know. We've got to find a way. Like, I think in terms of what students see and use, we've got to find a way to get back to some kind of, like, I know lots of ways to curate information, but nobody wants to talk about it because they're like, oh, but you could just search it. And I'm just like, it's not the same.
Yeah.
We've got to find a way to get that kind of discussion back into the spotlight. Like, this is what it looks like if you have curated results versus students just searching.
I like that idea. Yeah.
Put a stopwatch on it. Give this kid like 10 minutes. See if he can find more than the like 2,000 links I could probably add on. Like, how long does it take you to add quality links over a week? One person could add 1,000.
And there are plenty of services out there. Symbaloo, Delicious. There are plenty of, I mean, you can put it into a Google Doc and share it. There are plenty of ways that you can get those and curated links and get them out to your students.
And as my disappointment grows, who purchased Delicious? A long time ago.
Oh, Yahoo.
I thought that was it. I was like, this is what they're going to do. And then it just fell apart. They bought Tumblr, and now they're the capital of porn.
Yes. Yeah, that was a painful ship to watch go down, too. Everybody was so hopeful when Marissa Meyer got on board. Everybody was like, wow. Everybody was so hopeful that she would, but no, it just got bad to worse. And
even in Korea, I was like, okay, we got to block some stuff. Have you guys blocked anything yet? And they're like, well, we didn't know what to block, so we're waiting for you, but we did block Tumblr. I was like,
all right, well done.
They just like, it's like even the Koreans were like, oh yeah, Tumblr's blocked. It's done. Like first thing, Tumblr's blocked.
Oh yes, we must block the Tumblr. That's oh yeah. Oh my gosh. Yeah. I know we have. I'm pretty sure we have it blocked. I am pretty sure we have it blocked at school. If not, it will be done. It will be blocked tomorrow. All right. Well, speaking of websites and creating websites and whatnot, I reviewed Canva, www.canva.com. Canva, not Canvas, but Canva.
I've definitely heard about Canva before. I think my wife wrote an article about it. Okay. Tell me more, Patrick.
All right. Well, Canva is kind of neat. So you have sites like Weebly that makes websites, right? And then you have sites that, but Canva will help you make. You can make a website if you want to, or you can make like an image. You can make a logo. You can make a banner. You can make a brochure. Like, it has a ton of templates. And when I say a ton, I'm not exaggerating at all. I'm talking. I think they have 45 major categories, and each one of those categories has subcategories. It's huge. It's enormous. It's almost one thing I warned about people in my review, teachers. I was like, do not let students go here willy nilly. You got to tell them exactly what they're making. If not, they'll spend hours just going through templates and going through different designs because there are so many of them, It's huge. But it's a really simple drag and drop. And what's really nice about it, Tony, is it has royalty. It has a picture search built into it.
So oh.
You can type in like panda and it'll show you a panda and it'll show you all the free pictures that are royalty free, copyright free, right at the top. And then as you scroll down, then there are more professional ones where you may have to pay a buck for or $5 for or something. But they got the free ones right there, and you can just drag it in there and resize it, and it's really nice. And they have a whole bunch of vector art where you can bring that in and a bunch of fonts, and you can upload your own images. It's really, really, really nice. But I warn people. I like Canva, I do, but I warn people. The very first thing I made in Canva, I could not download it. And then I said, well, you know, I'll log out and I'll log back in, maybe something. And when I logged back in, it was gone. So I worked on something for 30 minutes, and it's gone. And I was like, ah, crap. So I had to make it again, but that's okay. That's fine. It's, in fact, I made a new banner for the IT Babble website. Did you check that out? Have you seen that?
No, I'm going to go now.
Yeah. I don't know if I – something – WordPress did something funny to it. WordPress told me the dimensions it has to be, and so I made it those exact dimensions. And I've checked it in image editors, and I've checked it in the properties of the image file itself. And it's the right dimensions, but it doesn't quite fit, and so it looks a little smushed. So I gotta play around with it and try to
– I think you need to make it I'd make it like 5 or 10% smaller. I think WordPress is zooming it in.
Yeah, that's what I think. So I'm
just make it.
Oh, so here's another bad thing about Canva. This is, you know, if you want to resize what you've made, nope, you can't do it. That's a paid feature. That's a paid feature. So you got it. You have to start over. I mean, I guess you could put it in an image editor. Like if you have Mac, you could put it in a preview. And crop it or resize it there, or if you have Photoshop or something like Photoshop, Affinity Photo, for example, would work. That's a $50 program for Windows, and it's really good. That's a really great program. So I like Canva. I just you gotta really think it through out there, people, teachers, educators. If you want to use Canva, it's good, but you use it first. Find out exactly what you want your kids to do with it. It's really simple to use. You will not spend a lot of time teaching them how to use it. I think you could go as low as third grade, but you have to be very, very specific about what they need to create and what you expect that to look like. And then I think you'll be okay. I think you'll be all right. But it's good. It's really good. I think you can get really professional looking stuff out of this really quickly. And it's super easy to use, and it is quite powerful. It is pretty good. I like it. So Canva.
Exciting.
Yeah. Check it out, people out there. It's good. I saw it on Free Tech for Teachers because he, Richard Byrne, and a number of other EdTech bloggers, I guess Canva reached out to them, and they said, hey, you guys are real teachers. You've talked with other teachers. What are they looking for? And they helped shape the service, and it's good, except that it lost my first thing. It lost my first creation, my first project. And just to let you know, Tony, when I was doing it, there was me and about 20 other people in the school, and that was it. So there were no network hiccups or anything. Everything was smooth. I was streaming music on Mixcloud. Everything was going fine, but it just didn't save, even though it said it saved. I don't know. That's, you just got to be worried that if you have a whole classroom full of kids, that's a possibility that it could happen. And so you need to have a plan B how are you going to address that kind of thing. So that's it.
Yeah.
That's it.
I think it's, you just give them a tissue box and be like, this is what life is. Yeah. Disappointment.
Yeah. Go cry in that corner. Go cry in that corner, Johnny. It'll be fine. You know, it's awesome. We're telling kids to go cry in corner. With a tissue box. All right.
Yep.
So, Tony, you are angry. I see that you
are. Oh, my God.
You are angry. And you are angry at something that most people don't get angry at.
No. Maybe. Here's the thing. Maybe I'm doing this wrong. So, this is your opportunity to be like, no, you're doing it wrong.
Okay. All right.
Later. I am trying to find a way to be able to message all the parents in the school with Google Apps.
All right.
So first, I was like, I'm going to set up Google Groups. I'll set up one for high school, one for middle school, one for elementary. Because you can have external people in a Google group. So I set the group up, and I set it up so for people who aren't part of the organization. And I started adding the parent emails. Well, after I got to 100 emails in the high school group, it said, you can only add 100 emails a day for external users. And I was like, okay, that's not too bad, because after I get them all done, I'll only have to add a few a week, like, for changes. So then I went into the middle school group and got the same message. It's 100 a day for all your groups.
Well, how many emails are external emails are you trying to add?
Well, I have 1,200.
Oh my gosh. That's 3 months.
Yeah, I'm not doing that. So I'm like, okay. So I look up the rules. And it's like, you can use your Gmail account and use the BCC feature. And you can send up to 2,000 emails at a time. And I was like, okay, that's what I'll do. So this morning, I had to email all the parents. And so first I started with the high school, middle school, and I took all their emails. It's the smaller school. And I sent the message BCC, no problem. And it was only about probably about 500. The rest of the emails are in the elementary. So I sent about 500 emails and they went. Then I waited about 2 minutes and I sent another message with the same account to the elementary school parents. Yep, that didn't work at all. All of them bounced back. And so then I looked at the reason and it said, this user has been blocked. Like, it didn't say I exceeded my limit. It said the user email account was blocked. And so I clicked it and opened up the reason. There were like 6 possible reasons and I had no idea which reason it was. So I was like, you know what? I'm over the limit. I don't care what it says. I'm over the limit. So I opened another email account that I use for PowerSchool. I have an email that PowerSchool uses to message people. I opened that account up. It's a Gmail account. And I sent the rest of the emails through that for the elementary school. Because if you're over your limit, it doesn't send the ones that aren't over the limit. It just doesn't send the whole batch. So,
wow.
And people are like, how do you know that? Because I put my personal email in the end, and I put my work email in the beginning of all of these. So I should get one email to my work account, and when it's finished, the list is finished, I should get another email.
Oh, very smart, very smart.
So I should get one to start and one to end, and I didn't get any when I did the elementary schools the first time. So then I'm like, this is ridiculous. Like, there's no... And then you're like, Tony, why don't you use Mail Merge? Well, let me talk to you about that, Patrick.
Yeah, please do.
So I do have a Mail Merge set up in my office with Outlook that we use to invite people to PowerSchool.
Okay.
But I only invite parents to PowerSchool 2 to 3 grade levels at a time, and I only use one email for each parent. So I only use the mom's email or the dad's email. In an emergency, you're supposed to blast every email you have.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. So I use much smaller email sets. And when I use Outlook to do the mail merge, it does go through Google and it does work. However, there was a point where I needed to use mail merge to invite all of the high school and middle school kids to a service called STEMScopes. And when I would try to use the mail merge to invite all the kids at once, it did not work. In fact, it not only didn't work, the emails were never delivered and I never got an error message. I had kids in my class. I was like, watch your email accounts. I have all the grade 7 kids and I have like a bunch of grade 9 and 10 kids. So none of them got the emails. So then I just like, okay, I'll use smaller groups. So basically, if I were to use like 100 kids, they would get them, but over 100, they wouldn't, even though the Google rules don't say anything about this. And I went through all the settings in my Google Apps account. I don't have anything that's limiting. So So then I was like, finally, you know what I need to do? I need to use a native Google Apps mail merge system. So I bought one.
Oh, which one did you buy? Because I bought one too.
I can't remember the name, but I was so excited.
Was it
an
Indian guy? Because the one I got was from an Indian guy.
It was the Indian guy. And so I used the free version of that account to invite teachers to join this when they join the school, because it's only about 50 at a time.
Yeah.
So I paid for it. It took all of them. Then I did a mail merge to the students again, and this time I only did like maybe 150 kids. Same thing. No email delivered. So I don't know what to do. Obviously, Google thinks all this is spam, even though the emails are internal. If the kids are all in a Google group, it does work. Like, the Google groups internally work great, but they are useless for large external communication. And I'm hitting bottlenecks with every single broadcast email that is what I would consider an emergency email or to notify all parents. And so I don't really know what to do. I'm kind of like, I don't know what to do.
I'm at a loss for you as well. I mean, the only thing I could tell you is that their support is pretty good. Maybe they can be like, okay, look, we're going to green light this. You guys are going to be fine going forward. Let me just do this for – I don't know. I mean, we are a small school, and being so small that we have 400 kids, that we gave email accounts, Gmail accounts, parent Gmail accounts. And we told them, you need to use this. Now, do they all use it? No. Do they all read it? No, they don't. Which causes problems. Because that's the only way. I mean, we have other ways of communicating, but if we need to communicate with them directly, that's how we're doing it. We're not emailing their personal Gmail or their personal Hotmail or Yahoo or their work mail. We're not doing that. We're just emailing it here. So we could easily make these groups. But for what you're talking about, making 1,200 additional accounts and then trying to get the parents to actually look at those accounts, at those those Gmails, that's failure.
Yeah, I've got to find, I don't know. I might flag it up and try to have a conversation with Google about it. But I don't know. Is the answer to use something like MailChimp? Is that the answer? I mean, would that do?
Yeah, MailChimp would do it. And MailChimp is super flexible. So you can say, look, I want to send this many emails. You can actually purchase it either per emails, per like a total. Like, I want to send, you could buy 100,000 emails from them. You can buy 1,000,000 emails from them. And I'm not kidding about that. They actually, and their pricing plan, if you dig deep enough, you can find out what 1,000,000 emails will cost you. Mm. And it is something crazy. I mean, it's like less than a penny per email. And then you have that in perpetuity until you use up your 1,000,000 emails. So, or you can, you know, per month, like I'm going to send at least, you know, 4,000 emails per month. Well, okay, well, here's what that's going to cost you, whether you use it or not. That's what you know. So they have a lot, they're very flexible with the pricing, which is one thing I do like about MailChimp. And they also give you great, fantastic reports. Like, you can see who opened it, who clicked on any links, if there were bad links in there, if they opened it more than once. I mean, it's wonderful. I think it's worth investing. And it's free to start, right? Just to open up an account is completely free. So that may be something you have to do. But, yeah.
Yep. So totally annoying.
Yeah, completely. Wow, that would ruin my weekend. That would ruin my weekend for sure. That and being sick on Christmas. Those things stink.
Well, there's lots of illnesses and disorders out there, Patrick. Do you know of another one?
I do, and it's not official yet, but it sure sounds like it's going to be. And that is the gaming disorder. Gaming disorder, Tony. The World Health Organization is saying gaming disorder. Now, World Health Organization doesn't always get it right, but they do have a lot of legitimacy. You know, they do have a lot of clout. So when they say something, people tend to perk up and listen. And so I have an issue with it. I have an issue with it. I don't like the way they have it written, and I don't like. So I wrote a short thing on IT Babble. On January 8th, it's up there. It says gaming disorder.
I did.
You gotta
I, pick,
Yeah, did you like my little picture there of Snake saying, yep, yeah, you've got
it,
a disorder?
It was good.
It's good. Yeah. Anyway, so I'm going to read, and this is these, and I took this straight from the WHO website, so that's why it's got some. Anyway, so it has three kind of characteristics here: impaired control over gaming, you know, onset, frequency, intensity, duration, termination, context. So, and then these I imagine have to be like, you know, really, you know, you're focused on it. Two, increasing priority given to gaming to the extent that gaming takes over takes precedence over other life interests and daily activities. And three, continuation or escalation of gaming despite the occurrence of negative consequences. Now, Tony, I'm a novice gamer. I'm an amateur gamer, I guess. You know, I'm light gamer. You know, I find a game and I play one game at a time, but when I play it, I like to sit down for like 3, 5, 7 hours, and I like to play that game, you know, and I just sit down and play it for a very long time. And, you know, it'll keep me up at late at night, and it can get me really frustrated. And even though it gets me really frustrated, I keep going back, keep turning it on. Does this mean I have a disorder, Tony? I'm just wondering, do I have a disorder? Because I think people could argue that I have a disorder based on those characteristics, but
I don't know. It sounds like you're just playing when you have some free time.
Yeah, and like tonight, I didn't fire up the old game yesterday. I didn't fire up the old PlayStation. I probably won't fire it up until we have a long weekend because of Martin Luther King Day on Monday. So I'll certainly play some over the weekend for sure. But my problem is that they are going gaming and some of the caveat here, listen to this here. Where is it here? Hold on. There are some caveats, and here it goes. One, they're saying that this is not final, that it could change. Two, it's going to be updated on a daily basis, whatever. It is not approved by the WHO yet. And then the last one is, listen to this, not to be used. And they have bold. Everything that I've written here is exactly how it is on the WHO website. Not to be used for coding, except for agreed field trials. So if you code for like 18 hours a day, for like 7 days in a week, that's okay. You're not addicted. You're coding. You're built. I mean, I don't know. And I argue, and I said there are other activities. This should be a wider thing. This should be like a behavioral addiction, because you can be, there are people addicted to exercise, addicted to eating. Here are some of exercise, eating, cleaning, social media. I mean, yeah, you can be addicted to a whole lot of things.
To think almost anything, right?
Yeah. And it's a behavioral. So it's not like a cocaine addiction, which is physical. This is, you know, this is a behavioral thing that, so I don't know. I got some problems with it, and I think I think people have been going after gaming for years and years and years, anyway. So I don't like it. I think it's silly. I think it's stupid. I think it's pedantic. I don't know. You know, I don't know. What are your thoughts, Tony? Is gaming? I mean, I'm sure there are people. Now you're in Korea, right? Where a guy years ago actually died in a PC bomb.
Yeah. He did.
Because he was there for over 24 hours, and he didn't eat, and he didn't sleep, and people thought he was sleeping at his computer, and then they went to rouse him, and he fell out of the chair, and he was dead.
That's right.
Yeah, so you were there. You're in a place where they take gaming disorder very seriously. I think they were the first country. They, like, have camps all over the place. And anyway, what are your thoughts on this?
Okay, well, first off, saying it's a gaming disorder, I mean, it's not. I mean, the addiction to the game is coming from something else. It's not the game. If they didn't have the game, I'm certain they would be addicted to something else. And I think a lot of it with a lot of these kids is maybe they get home and they don't have anything to do and they're locked inside, and, you know, some of these video games are really expensive, so their parents might just buy them like one game or two games a year.
Oh yeah.
And then they play them nonstop. And then there's the There's the online chatting too, right? They meet people online and they chat.
Yeah, in some games they definitely have that. Not in all games, but in some.
So saying it's the game, I mean, it could literally be the socialization inside the game that's the addicting part.
Yeah.
Because if you look at the games that we used to play when we were younger, to us those games were awesome. So it doesn't matter that the games are they're like better now. The games were still awesome to us, but we had to play together like in a room. We couldn't play remotely with other people.
Yeah.
And if you wanted to run a LAN party or something, you had to have, you know, people had to come over and you had to set everything up. It was actually a lot of work.
Yeah, it was. A lot of setup.
So I think that that's probably one of the issues. And just looking at it as a game, I mean, they're completely negating the platform. Like, it's a platform. Mm-hmm. It's not a game. So what, you know, what's the disorder? Is the disorder that you're addicted to, like, talking to people about stuff you're interested in? Or is the disorder that you have this constant, fluid arena for, like, competition? Like, people who love basketball and playing basketball, if their bodies didn't get exhausted, how long would they play?
Ah, that's a very good point, yeah.
So they're not looking at it from any other standpoint. They're just like, these games are awful. And I talk to students about games all the time, and I tell them, you know, some of these games, they're really bad for you because you can't win. They're designed so that you never achieve anything.
Yeah. They just keep going forever and ever and ever. Yeah. Yep.
And kids who are bored and don't have anything else to do, why wouldn't they just keep playing them?
Yeah. Yeah. What level can you get? My wife plays a game on her iPhone. You have to save baby pandas or something. But she is on level, and I'm not making this up. She has surpassed 1,000, level 1,000.
What?
So, yeah, she's been playing it for years.
Wow.
So, I don't know. You know, and I find for a game, I will play it and play it. Like, I will put in, like, Skyrim. Remember, I was all about Skyrim in Dubai.
Yep, you do love some Skyrim.
I do. It's awesome. And I what I did is I put in about 88 hours, and then I was like, okay, I'm done. I'm done with this. And then I started, and then I switched to another game. That was it. And, you know, I went back to Skyrim, and I played it some more, like, months later. But, yeah, it was like I got to a level, and I was like, okay, that was it. And I was satisfied. I was done. I was like, that's it. I'm done with Skyrim for right now. I don't need to play it. And, I mean, it's out on the PlayStation 4. I could go out and buy the new Skyrim. It's not new. It's same Skyrim, but it's been updated. Yeah. Like, the graphics are updated and everything. And
new platform or whatever.
Yeah, new platform. I'd go and buy it, but I don't feel the need. I was like, if I can get a really good price on it, like $10, I think I'll go and get it, you know. But I don't have that compulsion. Like what? I don't know. It's just, I don't know. I think this thing will not last. I think it's going to have to change its wording if it is going to last. I'm sure there are people out there who are addicted to video games, but I think that number is so small that it's not like the millions. I'm sure there are people out there who say, oh, there are millions of kids addicted to games out there. Watch out. They're going to ruin America. You know it, too. You know it.
Oh, I know. I know.
You're mongering. Right. But I don't know. This can't last. Now, remember, here's something that a lot of people, the WHO, the World Health Organization, actually said homosexuality was a disease until 1992. So they get things wrong sometimes. You know, they get things wrong or are sometimes a little slow. So I think this is a political maneuver. I don't think they're, you know, if they were serious about this, they would have put gaming disorder or gaming addiction under a larger umbrella, but that didn't happen. So I'm very suspect of this. So
yeah, I'm just waiting for the conference where we're gonna have to like go to a conference and it's gonna be like the keynote.
Oh yeah, and you know there's gonna be pressures on schools to address this and be like, you need to sit down and have a talk with your students about gaming and how terrible it is. They need to get outside and kick a soccer ball. which I have no problem with that. I think that's great, but I don't think they need to take their Xbox and throw it into the dumpster just yet.
I think the same obsession kids have with social media is the same obsession they have with gaming. I think it's the social connection that they make. And the social media stuff is way worse because they get nothing out of it. They're just constantly scrolling, yeah, liking stuff. They're not really thinking. It's just kind of mindless humor.
Yeah. And speaking of social media, I'm very close to deleting my Facebook account. And just,
uh-oh.
I'm really thinking of doing it. I've got a few things that are tethering, and when I say a few, three things that are tethering myself to Facebook, but I think I can sever those and then get off. I'm not really on it anyway. Now that I'm in the States, I'm not really on it at all. Hardly at all. I mean, when I was overseas, it was a good way for.
I understand it. It's the same thing. It's the best way to, like, if you've got other people on it, share photos and statuses, yeah, and stuff like that.
Yeah. But I don't know. Now that I'm in the States, I mean, my parents are my family is 3 hours away. Jennifer's family is 9 hours away. But I mean, that's a drive. That's a drive you can do that in a day. Or fly. We could fly there in 2.5 hours, 3 hours.
I call my family pretty much every week. I don't know. I think it's mostly like if you live somewhere where a lot of people are using Facebook and you're using it to plan events and stuff, it is useful for that. But
yeah,
just, you know, I literally can't read any feeds. Like, I can't. It's crazy. The stuff that people post, you're like, oh my God.
Yeah. Like, what were you thinking? why would you write that up there? I mean, nothing personal or something cathartic. It's just, it could be political or something divisive, or people saying how much they love the Star Wars, The Last Jedi, or how much they hate it. I mean, I don't know. I think I'm leaving Facebook, getting off of it,
We'll see what happens.
We'll see.
Well, you can take a break for 2 weeks.
Oh,
they have, like, you can take a break. That's an option with Facebook.
Take a break. Yeah, they don't want you to leave. I know they used to be very difficult to delete your Facebook account. It was like a hidden link. So, but all right. Well, Tony, I think we've exhausted our agenda items. Do you have anything else you want to add, or?
No, that's it. And while we were on here, I downloaded the email log so I can have a conversation with Google.
Do it. They're very nice and very helpful. I don't know if they can help you or not, but MailChimp is definitely a great alternative, and MailChimp never goes down. They're just you can even stagger out the emails if you want to, which is something that's really nice. You can be like,
that would be yeah.
So, anyhow, well, I guess for IT Babble, I am Patrick,
and I'm Tony,
and we will catch you on the next episode. So keep on babbling out there.